to get out, because he wanted to bring something up. And I learned later, he had made up a list of what he thought everybody in that group should pay me. And he didn't consult me about it at all. And a lot of them did increase their fees to me. But that was, I knew right then, that was the beginning of the end of the group. And a lot of them didn't like it. And they were doing it because they had to, not because they wanted to then. So who the heck else? Let's see, and I see Rich writings and see writings show up on here. I haven't done this in I don't know how long, gone through this silly book. John Brown Towers, which is now Dixie Towers out there. That was, they handled the opening ceremonies and the publicity and all of that, publicity for that one. Well, that tower was owned and developed by John Brown. You know, you heard of John Brown University? John Brown Academy in Signal Hill?
Oh.
Yeah, that religious group developed that tower out there on Atlantic.
Yeah.
They hired me to handle the publicity and organization of the opening ceremonies and all that. It was originally just strictly an apartment development.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it was for seniors then, no? Ah, here we go. In April of 1965 was when that group, right in that area, is when the split started to occur. Because suddenly here are some new guys on the committee and new payors to me. Ball Hunt and Hart, the law firm. Nishkin, Marty Nishkin, the engineer. Westgate, California. A guy by the name of Bob Graham was brought in that represented. Then it was C. Arnold Smith, who had U.S. National Bank and owned the Los Alamos Shopping Center, developed it. There was, but maybe Whaley developed it, but they were very active out there. And a guy by the name of Bob Graham ran the association out there. Clark Westman and Clark, Henry Clark, was brought in. Killingsworth, Brady and Associates. Riding Motors, Bud Riding, was brought in. Yeah, he was on the harbor board at that time, I think, yeah. Was there anybody else? No, I don't think so. That was it. Well, there were other guys on the committee, but they didn't pay. I mean, they weren't involved in paying me. People like Harry Fulton from the Press Telegram, later Don Ohl, Dan. Yeah. Don Ohl, the Press Telegram. Dan Ritter. I don't think there's anybody else. I guess not. Well, and about that time in 65, I went on the board of directors of the amusement company when they were trying to convert that area from amusements into commercial development. And I was on the board when the General Telephone building was authorized and built. The what used to be the Bank of California, and it's now what? Sumitomo. Sumitomo Bank. And the airline building there on Ocean Boulevard, right next to the Sumitomo Bank building, that was built by the amusement company. They were trying to develop then a great big housing complex down there. That's still going on, but different people. They were trying to do it themselves then.
Yeah.
They'd even build a model apartment of what they wanted to do. And I think they had hired Hugh Gibbs, the architect, to design it for them.
How did they decide not to pursue the amusement anymore?
I think it was the head of the corporation at that time was Dr. Frank Stanton. And at one time, Frank was all for developing the equivalent of Tivoli Gardens down there. He really wanted to do a nice, really high-class amusement park. That never really got off the ground in the board members. There used to be a nifty guy on that board by the name of Elmer Valaire, who he and his brother were old gymnasts in the circus group, carnival men, and they were in the business of designing rides for amusement parks, and they had a business in Signal Hill. And I remember when we began to talk about converting that area into buildings, office buildings, Elmer would sit there and he'd say, "You guys," he said, "you want to invest dollars to make dimes." And he said, "if we'd stay in the amusement business, we could invest dimes and make dollars." But he always went along with the majority of the board, and he voted for all of these things. But he didn't do so happily. I mean, he just hated to see the amusement business go. I think Elmer's gone now.
Did
he
also build a replacement
fund? I think so. It was right around in that area, yeah.
So that was the beginning, that was the
really
demanding thing.
Pretty much, yeah.
Even though?
It was, you know, the revenues were going downhill. It was a tawdry area. Let's see if there are any other ones in there. I saw them go by that I'd forgotten all about. What was it? Where'd it go? Called New Way Laundry and Cleaners. They had a plant burned down. And they hired me to help publicize the fact that they were still in business and still going strong, which they were. They did a super job. A guy named Harry Peterson just worked day and night to keep the business going, even without a plant. He had enough friends in the industry that they all chipped in and helped him get all his cleaning and stuff done elsewhere until they could build a new plant. Well, that's about it. I haven't seen any other names on here that... on that hardcore group. Then, at some point, and I can tell you when that all started to die down too, because the fees start to stop.
Well, some reintegration was authorized.
Yeah.
And then they brought in the consultants and everybody finally...
Find the contract, exactly. You're talking about the Gaudian
McNaughton?
Yeah. I think the settlement of the Navy suit, and I couldn't tell you what year that was. You could probably tell me.
Well, I could look it up.
Yeah. But once subsidence was out of the way, there wasn't a cohesive force that held that committee together. And I was in a situation where my marriage had broken up, and I was not the most productive person in the world. And gradually things just kind of died down. And I was embarrassed to take the money from several of them, so I called them up and said, "You know, no, this is ridiculous." Well, anyway, I would say that the committee really went out of existence back by this would be what month is this? Probably by January of 68 it was pretty well. Yeah, the end of 67, beginning of 68.
Mm-hmm. As you've been going through there, you have it.
Oh, well, that was something totally independent. That had nothing to do with money.
Oh.
No, that was just a brainstorm that I had. We had started out in downtown Long Beach, and I kept yakking at the newspapers about having lived in Washington, D.C., and seen the cherry blossoms, and seen the tremendous attraction they are to tourists. I kept saying, why can't we do something like that here in Long Beach? So We had a program that the newspapers were behind one time to take the railroad tracks, the PE tracks, out of Long Beach Boulevard. And it had a brainstorm that we could get rid of Skid Row on the south side of Ocean Boulevard, which were all the old taverns and stuff that catered to the sailors, by widening the street.
Mm-hmm.
The only way you could widen that street was to the south.
Mm-hmm.
Yes and no, but on Ocean Boulevard, you couldn't go north because you had too many valuable properties right up to the sidewalk. But south, there was all that city parkland.
Right. Right.
And incidentally, you could take out Skid Row.
Yeah.
So we convinced the city traffic, I can't remember his name. I remember Sam Cameron and I drove him down and showed him what could be done. Just drove the circuit. Take out the tracks and landscape and beautify Long Beach Boulevard all the way out to Willow, and do the same thing, widen Ocean Boulevard and landscape the center. And I wanted to get one kind of flowering tree in there, like, so that, you know, when they flowered, we'd have this tremendous show of color. Then we got into a terrific battle, particularly with used car dealers up on Long Beach Boulevard. And we didn't carry the day. We lost those two propositions. They were called S&T. Killingsworth and I worked on that real hard. And he later was the architectural consultant to the State College, to McIntosh, particularly. He called me one day and he said, hey, why can't we do the flowering tree bit out at the university? He says, I think that we can convince them, you know, that this would be a good deal if the trees are donated. So I thought it was a super idea and formed a committee. I was going to give you that file, and I will, because I don't have any more need for it. Oops, I forgot I was one. Just started out raising the, you know, nickels and dimes here and there. Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts and Cub Scouts and people, and we, Mac Epley publicized it constantly in his column. And I even got my dad in Buffalo, New York to donate $25 for a tree. So the interesting thing to me, it shows you what kind of a man Ritter is. Eddie Lovell, who was the consultant, the landscape consultant to the university, picked the tree. And I told him, let's get something as close as we can to the cherry blossoms in Washington. And that's why he picked the Helen Borcher's peach.
Yeah.
Well, we had to, Eddie then found out where they all were, and we had to order from all the nurseries to get enough trees. We had to actually order in advance, before we had the dough, all the trees on the West Coast, up into Oregon or Washington even, which we did. We got down to the point where they had to be paid, and we didn't have the money. So McIntosh said, you got to cancel the orders. And we just have to cancel part of them. Well, he was talking to Hank Ritter one day, and Hank, he mentioned that they were canceling this thing. Ritter says, you can't do that. He says, reinstate the order, and I will pay for it if we don't raise the money. And Hank did. He picked up the tab. I can't remember what it was, and it may or may not show in there. I think Frenchie Flynn's records on the donations is in there. I hope it is.
Yes,
is it? Okay. But old Hank charged in, and he insisted that they reinstitute the orders, and, I don't know, 3,000 trees or something ultimately got planted. And almost the same thing on the sculpture symposium out there. Killingsworth got me involved in that, too. He was acquainted with Ken Glenn, and he came down to talk to me, would I be interested in helping do this thing? And well, it was a unique first for Long Beach.
Oh, yeah.
And so I sure said, sure. And I ended up, not by choice or design, but I was part of a triumvirate that headed that thing. We had three co-chairmen. There was Bill Reed from North American Aviation. There was Dr. Bob Buffum, who was interested in the arts, and myself. And somehow I got elected finance chairman and was desperately trying to raise money. Now, Ken Glenn had given us a budget of $50,000 or $52,000 to do this whole thing. And when the international sculptors came into town. They were temperamental. They demanded more. They didn't like their accommodations. They wanted apartments. They wanted cars. The budget just completely went out of control. And Ken did not keep control of it. With the result that instead of $50,000, we were looking at $150,000 in debts. And there again, good old Hank Ritter came to the fore at one time. Bethlehem Steel had provided the steel for, and I can't remember the American sculptor's name, who made the, it's a thing that looks like this.
Yeah.
Murray was the guy's name, I think. And they'd ordered the steel, fabricated it, never paid him. And McIntosh talked to me and said, is there any way we can raise this bill? And I said, I don't know. Let me find out. And I was telling Ritter about it. He said, well, hell, have a check drawn, call accounting at the paper and have a check drawn, sent out to McIntosh, and we'll pay it. Something like $3,000 for that one sculpture. So I didn't think anything more about it. And God, one day McIntosh called me and he said, Bob, he said, the lawyers are here from Bethlehem Steel. And unless we pay, they're going to file a lawsuit against the university today. He said, didn't you tell me that Ritter was going to pick up this tab? And I said, well, yeah, you should have had the check long ago. And he said, well, find out for me, will you? What's happened? So I said, sure, I'll call you back. So I called down to the paper and talked to Ritter's secretary, and I said, hey, I recited what had happened. And it was Grace Cooney was her name, and Grace said, oh, that's who this check is for. It's been on my desk for weeks, I guess. And I said, don't do anything with it. I'll come right down and get it. And I went down, took the check, and took it out there. And he was able to get these guys out of his office by paying them off. But it was nip and tuck on that damn thing all the way through. It was something else. And I think I told you at lunch, I really got annoyed with Ken Glenn. However, none of it would have happened but for him. He had the idea. He made the contacts abroad, and he deserved the credit for it, because it wouldn't have happened but for him. And the other idea he has, which is a great idea if somebody could get behind it and raise a dough, and that's to put the equivalent of a Statue of Liberty, something on that scale, out here at the breakwater outside these two harbors, which would be, you know, a landmark for these harbors.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody's ever been able to figure out how to do that, how to raise the money for it. So anyway, that's how the flowering trees got going. We couldn't get them downtown. Then we did get, if you'll notice, the VA hospital. I talked to the then head of the VA hospital to see if they wouldn't plant some trees, which they have done. And I got Bob Graham, who was running the Los Altos Shopping Center Association, to get the merchants out there to agree. And you'll notice in the spring they got some that bloom occasionally.
Mm-hmm.
But that's about as far as we could get with them. We tried to get other people in town to do it, to no success really. And I know they cause all kinds of problems. And I've heard of the landscape people out there, the maintenance people, just swearing up and down about them.
They still have pieces on it.
Yeah, I know. They're supposed to be pruned after they bloom.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah, they're supposed to be pruned. Eddie Lovell can tell you all that, the landscape guy.
Yeah, well, I talked to a botanist on campus. He's very sensitive about
trees. Oh,
really?
Yes. We ran some kind of a contest, and I can't even remember. It may be in there. Trying to get some kind of an event to celebrate, you know, the trees blooming. And there's some real wild ones in there. And I don't know, has there ever been an event developed out there for them?
Oh, yeah. At one time, you had an open house.
Uh-huh.
And just invited people in to drive around and put on things on campus.
Yeah.
And I think this year they're planning something.
Have they? Yeah. They haven't bloomed well, really, because we haven't any cold winters.
They're trying to know exactly when they're going to bloom.
Yeah.
It's hard to schedule.
Yeah.
You can't have an event that isn't scheduled ahead of time.
You got a guy out there, I think he may still be on your faculty, by the name of Bob Wells. Do you know Bob or know
yes.
of him? that used to be with the newspapers.
Yes.
And I worked with Bob on the Custom House program. And he and I worked well together. He's a terrific writer, that guy. And I did the organizing of the Chambers of Commerce in San Pedro and Wilmington and Long Beach and tying them all together. We formed a joint harbor area committee to move that Custom House down here. I think Bob, does Bob still teach out there part-time, you know? Yeah. He has records, and somewhere I have, and I can't find it in my files, unfortunately, I had the Fortune magazine piece on that sculpture symposium that was a humdinger. That, yeah, you ought to have that in connection with the sculptures because we got tremendous national publicity, and the value of that piece alone was worth more than what it cost us to do the symposium. But those, again, those are all the kinds of things I get into for the newspapers for. I didn't really get into those for the Press-Telegram. But I was always trying to figure out ways and means of publicizing Long Beach and making it more attractive to outside capital and tourists and whatever. Hank happened to like those two things. I was well into them. And he subscribed to them and supported them. But I didn't go to him to get an okay to get into them at all. It wasn't a newspaper function in the beginning. The other thing that was interesting, the international city concept. Did I tell you that?
No.
Okay. I was always concerned that we didn't have an image-building slogan for the city. And, well, to make a long story short, ultimately came up with that idea. And I put down all the reasons on paper as to why we were qualified to call ourselves that. And also what could occur if we did that. And I called Hank one day and said, hey, I got an idea, brainstorm, I just want to try on you for size. And so he said, well, come on up. So I went up to the paper and he's sitting there behind his desk and I'm sitting there at his desk telling him, you know, this story. And all at once, he hadn't said a word, he turned his back to me and was staring at the fireplace. And I finished my pitch on why we ought to do this. And he didn't say a word. Didn't look at me. Didn't turn around. So I said, well, Hank, that was my idea, and I appreciate you listening to it. And I got up and started to leave the office. He said, get back in here. And he said, there's only one thing wrong with your idea. And I said, what's that? He said, the only thing wrong with it is I can't find anything wrong with it. Well, he went into action. He said, okay. He said, let's do it. He said, you get a hold of the city council and all the harbor officials and the works. Tell them I want to host them for breakfast. And you and I will present this to them. So we had a breakfast over in the Lafayette Hotel. We had the harbor board, the harbor manager, the city council, the city attorney, the city manager. And Hank led it off, you know, introduced it, and then I presented why I thought it would work and what it would do for the city and recommended that they adopt it officially as the city theme. And they came back and said that to do that, they would have to have public support for it. There would have to be a visible demonstration of support for this concept. And then they could be free to adopt a new theme for the city. The city's theme still is officially, or on the city seal, is the words Urbs Amicitiae, City of Friendship. And we've been the, Iowa by the Sea and the Queen of the Beaches and that kind of stuff. So I got the Chamber of Commerce, the Board of Realtors, the Apartment House Association. I can't remember all of them. There were about five or six groups that I appeared before and got them all to adopt resolutions recommending this. Then we put together a team to be before the city council and formally say, will you do this? And they said, yes, we will, and they did it. They adopted it. And then we went from there down to the Harbor Board, and since they were the other legislative body in town, and they officially adopted it, too. Somewhere around, I've got that story, too, somewhere. But I don't know whether that's of any interest to you now. Huh?
it's how you think they're in lobby. It's an example of that.
Yeah.
As well as where that idea of
laundry
supermarket
station. Yeah. Unhook me and I'll find you that
far. Oh, I sure made myself vice chairman. I made Dick chairman. That was what it was. Okay, Bill Crawford was Belmont Savings and Loan, which was ultimately taken over by Great Western. Mac Epley, of course, was the columnist for the paper. Don Orr was the editorial page editor of the paper. Ed Killingsworth was the architect. Bob Wells worked at the paper, and he's on your faculty now. Eddie Lovell, your landscape architect. D.W. Campbell was then the manager of the Chamber of Commerce. Phil Hattery was the man prominent in the city, a prominent insurance man. Norb Dean was Fred Dean's son, and Norb was the past president of the Rotary Club. Daryl Neighbors. This is Richard Blanchard, I don't know who she is. Warren Harper was, I think he was a retailer downtown. Mrs. George Cobb, and she was head of Long Beach Beautiful then. It was really sponsored by the Chamber. Bob Graham was the representative of Tiana Holt Smith here then, and ran Los Altos Shopping Center and U.S. National Bank out there. In fact, Travis Montgomery, that now is the Secretary of the Harbor Board, used to work for Bob Graham out there. O'Reilly was the developer of it, but I think, so don't ask me how, but I think Leon Holt Smith somehow took over that shopping center. It used to be a Walker's department store out there that now is the Broadway. It was their first venture out of downtown. Jackson McGowan on here was then the president of Douglas Aircraft. And Jack had been, I'd gotten him on an industrial committee that I headed for the Chamber on Industrial Development and got acquainted with him pretty well. George Johnson is still here. He's an attorney over at 60 Elm. George is a past president of the Chamber and is very prominent in the community. George Cobb, Clay Collins, who used to be the publisher of the Independent. Dr. Francis Hertzog. And I don't know whether that's senior or junior. But senior, he's now dead. And I'm not sure which one that was. We wanted to get a fairly broad representative group that they could use. And we picked these letterheads for go with the training.